postman asleep in the sand. He's got a get well card to deliver. He's gonna do it by hand.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Frederick Rolando, the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. He began his career in 1978 and quickly became involved in the union upon experiencing the antagonistic way management treated letter carriers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Frederick Rolando.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And the U.S. Postal Service has agreed to a moratorium on the closing of more post offices and mail facilities until May the 15th of next year, apparently to allow Congress time to work on a plan to save the service. My understanding is that Congress, in many ways, is responsible for why the service is in such terrible shape.
Yes, that's partially accurate, yes. That's true.
Well, tell me what it is that Congress has done to hamstring the service.
Well, this dates back to 2006 when Congress passed the Postal Enhancement and Accountability Act. And part of that bill required the Postal Service to pre-fund their future retiree health benefits for the next 75 years. And do so in a period of 10 years. That's something that no other federal agency and no other corporation is required to do, with an intent, likely that the intent of that was that out of the profits that the Postal Service had, they would be able to pre-fund future retiree health benefits. The problem was that the provision had no language as to what to do if you didn't have sufficient profits to do that, because the cost of doing that in a 10-year period was approximately $5.5 billion a year. That's interesting to note that during the 4 years from 2006 to 2010, those fiscal years, despite the fact that we were in the worst recession in 80 years and despite the fact that we lost volume to the internet and so forth, the Postal Service still turned a profit of some $600 million. And while that's pretty good because they did a lot of internal cost cutting and so forth, working with the unions and the employees and so forth, it certainly wasn't enough of a profit to pay off this $5.5 billion. So in effect, all the losses that we read about in the headlines and so forth during that period really had nothing to do with the Postal Service's core business of delivering the mail. What it had to do with was depleting their savings and their borrowing authority to pay this $21 billion for pre-funding future retiree health benefits.
So who came up with this plan that you say is unique in both government and in private business in terms of the onerous nature of it? And I understand that the Postal Service is now facing a deadline on to make a $5.5 billion payment. Who came up with this legislation?
Well, this was something that the Congress came up with. It came up through the Senate, through the subcommittee that has oversight over the Postal Service. Part of the purpose of the bill was to offset some surplus money that the Postal Service had in one of their pension funds to satisfy the scoring provisions of the Congress. And that's why these payments were required. Which is really ironic because the Postal Service, two independent actuaries, have now determined that they again have a surplus in their civil service retirement system of somewhere between $50 and $75 billion, depending on which accounting procedure is used to calculate it, which could easily be used to do the pre-funding that was required by the 2006 law.
Well, what I'm trying to find out here, Frederick Rolando, again, the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers, is whether this was some kind of ideologically driven trap that the Postal Service was placed in. since nobody else is subject to this these onerous conditions, and in terms of the public's understanding of what's happening with the post office, most of them have accepted the notion that it's to do with competition from the internet, etc. And very little publicity has been given to this fundamental problem that you're talking about, which is unique to the post office and has been imposed upon them by the Congress. My question is, what's the motive, do you think?
Well, regardless of the intent, I mean, there's those that believe it was something that was done intentionally with a plan to privatize the Postal Service and, you know, turn it over for corporate profit rather than to serve the American people with the universal service that they're entitled to. But, you know, regardless of what the intent was, and I'm not advocating that that's what the intent was, the point is that now it needs to be fixed because there's a couple of things that need to happen for the Postal Service. Again, if this pre-funding was to either be satisfied by transferring the surplus in the pension accounts that have been overpaid by the Postal Service, or just stop the pre-funding until such a time as the Postal Service is profitable, that would satisfy part of the problem as far as the cash flow and restore the Postal Service's savings and borrowing authority and so forth. But the other thing that has to be done is as much volume that was lost during the recession and as a result of diversion to the internet, there's a certain amount of revenue that the Postal Service does need to replace. And that's the other thing that has to be done besides fixing the pre-funding issue in Congress, is the Postal Service now has to concentrate on a business model to utilize the valuable networks that they have to find ways to replace the lost revenue, which is one of the good things about this moratorium, where which is basically a moratorium on the Postal Service slashing service and destroying their networks. Whether it's consolidations, closing post offices, eliminating Saturday deliveries, all the things that they've proposed that would destroy their networks. These networks are vital to the Postal Service as far as finding ways to grow the business. For example, while the internet has certainly posed certain challenges to the volume, it also creates opportunities because more people are now shopping online, and somebody's got to deliver those packages. And most people are home on Saturdays, and that's when the packages would need to be delivered. So that's just an example of some of the things that the Postal Service can do to grow the business. And again, it's very important not to destroy the networks that are so valuable to what the Postal Service does.
Again, I'm speaking with Frederick Rolando, the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. And in announcing the moratorium, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, and of course this moratorium would prevent or at least slow down the first-class plans to slow down first-class mail and to close 250 mail processing plants and eliminate 28,000 jobs. Dick Durbin saying it's time for the Congress to put up or shut up. What does he mean?
Well, I think what he's referring to is there's presently about 14 different bills affecting the Postal Service in the House of Representatives or the Senate. And I think what he's referring to is for the Congress to fix what they did in 2006, because it really comes down to some policy decisions. If you're going to require the Postal Service to do something that no other agency or company has to do, which is pre-fund, if that policy decision is made, they need to also make a policy decision on the accounting methods for the pensions so that they have the surpluses for the Postal Service to pay for that. And that's the subject of the majority of the bills that are before Congress right now. So they need to act on that. And they also need to act on other provisions in the bills that would allow the Postal Service the freedom and the ability to grow their business. So I believe that's what he's referring to is to, you know, let's put the moratorium on the slashing of the networks and the slashing of the services and concentrate on what we can do to treat the Postal Service fairly and to allow them to grow their business. And keep in mind, all the funds that we're talking about, whether it's the pre-funding or the surpluses in the civil service or the FERS account, we're not talking about tax dollars at all. We're talking about the Postal Service hasn't received any tax dollars in almost 30 years. So we're talking about money that has been received from the sale of services within the Postal Service.
So this has nothing to do with the arguments over the deficit and the budgets?
No tax money involved whatsoever.
Right. So what then is going on? Why does Representative Darrell Issa, the California Republican, who is head of the Oversight Committee, he's saying that the service has caved into political pressure. What do you think he's talking about?
I'm confused by Darrell Issa a little bit. I understand some of his agenda. I mean, I understand that he's anti-administration and that he's anti-government and that he's anti-middle class and so forth. And I get all that and understand what drives him there. But what I don't get is, you know, the Postal Service is the cornerstone of a much bigger industry that supports the Postal Service, whether it be printing, you know, and all the businesses that go along with that. We're talking about like $1.3 trillion postal industry that employs between 7.5 and 8 million workers. So I'm confused by the attacks that he is directly making on small businesses all over the country with this agenda, whatever is driving it. So very confusing.
So the Postmaster General, Patrick Donahue, he apparently has, you know, really come out against all of these bills, basically saying, I don't know how many of the bills there are, you mentioned there's a whole bunch of them, saying that they don't go far enough. So what is there a bill there that will get the post office out of the debt spiral?
Well, you know, there's a couple of bills that make a pretty good start. For example, H.R. 1351 in the House is a bill that acknowledges the surplus that was made in the civil service retirement system and provides for the return of that $50 to $75 billion to the Postal Service to use for to satisfy the pre-funding mandate from 2006. There's some bills that are very damaging. There's bills that would eliminate six-day delivery. It's important that there's a balance here. You've got to control your costs. You've got to look for ways to become more efficient, but not at the expense of jeopardizing the value of the networks that are the Postal Service and that would make it possible to grow the business and to adapt to the society and replace the revenues and so forth.
Well, just in closing, Frederick Rolando, again, the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers, you began your career in 1978, and you became involved with the union after experiencing the antagonistic way management treated letter carriers. I think the public's familiar with the term that's used of going postal. What happened to the post office? Why did the working conditions put so much pressure on letter carriers? What did that come out of? Was that another effort to make it more efficient or competitive with private enterprise? What was the motive behind creating working conditions that you witnessed that made life so difficult for the workers?
It's a culture. This is a very large company, and making changes is not easy in a company this size. And there's a certain culture that needs to be changed in the management styles. It's something we've been working on for years. I know in my 30 years we've worked on it. And there's people on both sides that are interested in changing that culture. And we don't really need anybody's help with that. That's something we'll work through internally. And we've made great strides over the years. As far as the term going postal, I mean, that's something that's so blown out of proportion. There's, you know, been events over the years that have happened. But if you look at the size of this company, and the number of events that have happened, it's minuscule compared to industries, other industries, and business in general around the country. It's a shame that we have that type label.
But you apparently did experience what you consider to be a hostile work way management was treating letter carriers, and that led you to join the union and eventually become the leader, the head of the union.
Sure, and like I said, that's an internal issue with the Postal Service that both sides will continue to work on. And in a company this size, it's going to take years to do so. And hopefully we'll continue to have people on both sides that want to work towards that.
So
it's a lot easier to do in a small company, but in a company this size, it takes a long time.
So you're happy with the Postmaster General then, Patrick Donahue, and his advocacy on your behalf, on behalf of your your members.
Yeah, I believe that we're on the same page with regard to a lot of the things that the Congress does. Where we differ is we advocate finding ways to use the networks to grow the business, whereas he's been advocating the slashing of services and so forth, and we think that it's vital that we maintain those networks and those services so that we can grow the business.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Frederick Rolando.
Okay, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Frederick Rolando, who is the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. He began his career in 1978 and quickly became involved in the union upon experiencing the antagonistic way management treated letter carriers. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking about whether we can live with a nuclear-armed Iran.
What's my station?